Welcome to the Uncommon Career Podcast, where you get clear direction, a persuasive brand, and a competitive strategy that moves you forward. My name is Patricia Ortega, and I'm your host and career coach. Welcome back. I'm so excited to be here with Julie Riga, who is a certified coach, a trainer, a speaker, and an author with over 20 years of experience in the e-pharma industry. She has a vast education with studies including business, communications, training, and executive coaching. Now, Julie does not only do coaching, she's also the author and podcast host of the program Stay on Course. The purpose of Stay on Course is to evolve the existing story of professionals who are wasting their lives on careers that they hate to change over to one where they joyfully give themselves to follow passion, purpose, and to live authentically. So excited to be here with you, Julie. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's so great to be here tonight.
I am glad that you're here. And so before we get started, I think it's important that we all know just a little bit about you. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. I grew up in New Jersey and went to college in Massachusetts and New Jersey. I was a communications major back in college and spent some time wishing and hoping that one day I would be a singer-songwriter. That was how I started my career in my life. Right. And then moved into working in the learning and development area in a couple of different companies. And then I ended up in Big Pharma, working for Big Pharma, doing communications, training and development, later to become an executive coach. And now I am the proud owner of a podcast, Stay on Course Ingredients for Success. And I was a co-author of my father's book.
And what's that book called?
So the book is called Stay on Course. This is the book, and it is Stay on Course, The Life and Legacy of Ennio Riga, Chef of the Stars. And the story goes like this. My father had been wanting to pen his life story from the time he was young. And so what he did was he kept journals and he kept all the pictures of everything that happened to him through his career. And so later on in his life, after he retired, he was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. Like, it kind of just hit him. We didn't know about it. And he's like, he took it on himself. He's like, I am not dying until I finish this book. And so he had a nurse that was at the house with him, and he would tell her the stories and she would type them. And about 4 months before he passed away, I got his life story in an email, and it said Ennio's book. And I go, Dad, what the heck is this? He's like, Julie, it's my life story. I got to do the accent. Hold on. Julie, it is my life story. You need to finish it. You know, to do this. And I said, Dad, when people die, they don't get a life story to finish. They get like an inheritance. You get money when people die, Dad. And he's like, no, I'm giving you this. You are to carry the legacy. You are now the patriarch of the family, basically, is what he told me, because I trust you. And so for 2 years after that, I finished his life story, learning so many lessons about legacy and about leadership and all the things that my father accomplished that I never got to know because my father was working all the time. So I got to learn about my dad in a whole new way by writing his book, finishing his book.
Okay, that is amazing. And it almost sounds like it's intertwined a little bit with the content of today. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about staying on course. My dad used to say to me, Julie, if the world falls down on your shoulders, brush it off and keep going your way. Stay on course. And I think that stay on course is a very valuable lesson. It was for me when I was growing up, and it's still a valuable lesson now.
I love that. I love that. Okay, so you've got this sort of treasure trove of learnings and insight, right, from your father. And then tell me a little bit. So you went into e-pharma. Tell me a little bit about that background.
Yeah. So I was working in the pharmaceutical industry, like big pharma. And I worked for companies like Novartis, Bayer, Johnson & Johnson, and really just climbing the corporate ladder is what I did. I started my career in big pharma as an administrative assistant. And I climbed all the way up to director. And so that's quite the climb in a short time. And so just like understanding all of the nuances of what it's like to work in a big, big company.
Wow.
Because big, big companies operate way differently than small companies do.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, that is what brings you to us, right? That is what is starting this conversation, because I saw on your LinkedIn that you help new managers to empower their teams without micromanaging. First off, thank you for addressing the micromanaging that is happening everywhere. But in your opinion, what is it that makes a good manager, a manager who doesn't micromanage, but yet is effective in their work?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like all in the setup. I think that we forget that it's kind of a simple change if you set it up right. Mm-hmm. So when a new manager takes on a role, they need to sort of like take a step back to take a step forward.
Mm.
And so what I recommend that new managers do is reset the team completely, create team norms, create team rituals, and build strategy sessions.
Mm.
So I tell all of them to start off with a strategy session so that they can bring all the team members together and build the strategy together. What you want to do is bring people into your world so that they can input and give the knowledge that you may not have, especially as a new manager. You want to extract that information from your team, but you want to bring them on the journey. This is about bringing your teams on the journey with you to become the facilitator and the coach of the team.
Mm, that is so good. So it's not even, you know, sometimes we think that if you're going into a management role, it's like, okay, how do I manage? But you're saying, don't even start there. Take a step back and sort of develop the culture, soak in the culture, and then like develop the culture before you go anywhere else. I love that.
I mean, I really love what you just said. It's not manage the team. It's like, how do I lead the team? I want managers to think about how can they lead the team? Because what you don't want to happen mm-hmm. is that you get into this new manager role and then you start over managing, that you start continuing to do the work that you've always done. Managers need to take a step back and look at the landscape in a new way. And so what I do in my program is I help them build some muscle around these skill sets,
mm-hmm.
facilitating, strategic thinking, communicating,
mm-hmm.
building the operations playbook that everybody contributes to. So it's a team effort. And you bring the team along with you along this process so that you're not micromanaging, you're not overmanaging, and people like you. You want to be liked. You
yes.
want to be liked along the journey. You want teams, you want your team members to take accountability. You want them to be able to speak up because you want to actually tap into their expertise. And I also, there's the other piece to this that I didn't really talk about is their own personal self mm-hmm. and their own personal growth, because they need to be okay with that, that they're a facilitator of the team. It's no longer about them
mm-hmm.
succeeding. It's about the team succeeding.
And that's huge. That was going to be my follow-up question. So we are so on the same page of, you know, when you're a first-time manager, inevitably, because we're human, those insecurities come in of having to like, okay, how do I assert myself? And how do I, you know, show that I know what I'm talking about? And those are the types of things that lead to the micromanaging in the first place, right? Trying to make it about you. But like you mentioned, a good manager is first a leader. I love that. Mm. I love that. So in your opinion, what is the first step or skill to better leadership? We talked a little bit about awareness already. You shared some gold nuggets, but essentially, how can professionals who are currently individual contributors start to move in and develop those skills to be in a future management position?
That's a really good question. And I'm going to answer it. I'm not sure if this is going to make sense to a lot of people. The quickest way for any leader to get to that place is for a leader to really understand themselves and know who they are. So it all starts here. And we look at the analogy of when you're on the airplane and the plane is going down and you're putting the mask on yourself first. It's really about you first. Understanding who you are, understanding what gets you excited to go to work, understanding what triggers you, what makes you work in like well. And it is about, and this is the word, self-authorship. Self-authorship. We talk about self-authored leaders, and we talk about self-authored leaders because they are the ones that have the confidence in themselves because they know themselves. You can only have confidence in yourself if you've done the work on yourself. That is where it all starts. Do you know your like personality traits? Myers-Briggs. Have you done Myers-Briggs? Have you done DISC? Have you done an assessment to really understand how you're operating? And then it's what makes me excited to work every day, to go to work every day? Am I really being authentic in this job? Do I really like it? And what am I there for? Like to gain some self-awareness around what you're doing and how you're behaving. So it's really an introversion activity where you're gonna need to go deep into yourself to look at these things. And so I call that part self-leadership, self-authorship.
I love that. So what you said just now, literally the last 30 seconds or so, you basically kind of are saying that the framework is the more outwardly you're leading, the more inward work you need to do.
Yeah.
That is huge. Okay. Well, we've got the first line management that we chatted about, but what do you think are the key differences when we go from first line manager to more senior managers? Like, what are the differences in leadership skills needed as you go farther and farther up?
Sure. And that is just, you're playing with a different crowd. You know, you're hanging out with different people. And the people that you're hanging out with when you get to the higher levels have a higher level of business acumen. They may be smarter than you. They may have way different skill sets than you. And so it's a matter of tapping into the collective brilliance of the team and understanding why you're sitting at the table. Why are you sitting at those tables? Why are you at the boardroom table? And a lot of the reason why you're there is to facilitate the work that you do with your team. So is it different? A little bit, but it's not so different. The biggest difference, in my opinion, is the level of zoom that you have. So I like to look at a camera. So you're zooming out a little bit more. You're starting to see different parts of the organization. As you grow into the bigger leadership roles, you want to be looking at your stakeholder engagement. Who are you engaging at all different levels of the organization? You want to know what's going on in all different departments, because if you have something you need to get done and you need this other department to help you, you need the relationships. So I think that's the biggest part here, is that as you grow up into the organization, it becomes more about the relationships than the actual work that you're doing. And it becomes more about the communication and the relationship part. So if you can get that right, and, you know, obviously the problem solving and the strategy and things of that nature, but that's the biggest difference.
Relationships.
Yeah.
That's the biggest difference. I like that. And, you know, when you are an individual contributor, I always feel like when you're an individual contributor, it's like the harder you work, the more you do, the better you are, right? But as you go up in the role, it is less about working hard, much less about working hard. And it's more about the impact that you made, and you can't make impact on your own. Like, that's what I'm getting from the conversation that you're sharing, is that you make impact through collaborations with other people who also have departments under them to come together and you know, move the bottom line forward.
Yeah, it's about impact. It's about alignment, aligning the work that you're doing with other people's work. Because most of the time, the work that you're doing as you get up into the organization is a collective of things that are going on across different departments. And really, to be quite honest, the worst and the most problems we get into as you grow up into the organization, I believe, all boil down to a very small word with a very big impact. And it's ego.
I'm like, what's the word?
It's ego.
Oh, gosh. Yes.
It's ego, right? Because everybody wants to have their own empire. If you're working with unhealthy managers and unhealthy leaders, it's about them building an empire, but that's not really what you're doing.
That's huge. That's huge.
Yeah, you're not building empires. You're building a collective movement, right?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I love this. And I could continue going along this vein, but I have a couple other questions for you, especially because you are coming from e-pharma, right? I work with a lot of STEM professionals and those in technical roles. And so my question to you is, for those in STEM and in technical roles, how do the skill set needs evolve as they move up in their career, right? Because it's very technical in the beginning. And as you go up in management, right, some things shift. So what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, it's totally shifting. It's shifting from I'm doing the scientific work and my head is down and I'm looking at the computer. I mean, I might be going to meetings and managing projects, but it's just exactly what I said. It's about relationships and communications. It's about relationship, communication, setting the direction of the team. And so that's a different skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem that we have in just in general is we try to promote people that are really good at what they do.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they're going to be a good manager or that they want to be a manager. You have to want to be a manager. Being a manager and a leader is about caring about people.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
You know, and I spoke to a leader once and I was kind of like interviewing one of my most cherished mentors in my career. And I'm like, what are you doing at these meetings? What are you doing at these leadership team meetings? And she says, I'm literally scanning the environment for opportunities for my people. I'm sitting at the leadership team, listening in for a potential opportunity for one of my people on my team to jump in and support something that will help them get a better profile in the organization.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. And so she's in a role where she can kind of advocate and watch out for other folks, right? What would you say are some really practical things that an individual contributor can do to develop the skill set, right? Because they don't yet have people under them, right? So what are some very practical things they can do to in their current role to develop that skill set and to also stand out as someone who has those qualities?
I mean, the first thing to do is to build a really good network. So I call this is what I call creating your corporate footprint. And the same leader said it to me once. She said, Julie, you know, you need to have your own footprint aside from your manager. Like, you need to be known within the organization for Julie and not for who you work for. And I was like, wow, that's deep. And so it's like, how do you network and have coffee chats and start doing that work? Because when you're in your role, you should start to be thinking about your next role. And in some of these larger companies that I've worked for, they only want you in role for 2 years. They want you promoted every 2 years or moving around the organization. So that's not a long time to get comfortable. I mean, some people stay in role for longer, but really it's a cycle of 2 years that you should be looking at something different. And so the skill set is say yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, here it is. Say yes to opportunities. Always say yes. Always be ready to present. Always be ready. Mm-hmm. I tell this to people all the time. If you're in a meeting with your boss and you have a slide deck that you might need to present, be ready. Have it open on your desktop and always be ready to present. The second thing is build your network. Build your network. And the third thing is start taking the classes that you need that you feel not confident in. Is it communication skills, conflict management? Do you need to do a Myers-Briggs assessment? You know, do you need to learn how to manage projects better? Like, any type of skill that is sort of outside your expertise, not your not your technical skill, but what are the softer, we call them power skills now. What are those skills that you need to develop to get to that next place? Because you want to be ready for the opportunity.
So you're building all of these skill sets and you're trying to figure out, is this the next position for me, right? Everyone thinks on the candidate side, I hear this all the time. Well, I don't want to look like I'm job hopping if I have less than 2 years experience, right? So number one, it's amazing to hear on your end that is an expectation that you change and switch roles and move up every 2 years, right? But as someone who might be like, okay, well, 2 years is not a long time. I've been developing these skill sets, but I feel like I'm just barely getting the hang of things. There's always this idea that you have to be really good at every one of the qualifications in order to land a position. What are your thoughts on that and the fact that everyone is expected to move up within just 2 years?
Yeah. And the two-year thing is in some companies, like it's not in every company, but the idea is that you're moving around the organization a little bit so that you get broader perspective and that, you know, eventually you'll move up. So sometimes people take lateral moves within organizations so that they could get a broader perspective. When it comes to your career, I think it's more about, do you think you can handle the role and can you demonstrate that you can handle the role? Because I can teach you, let's say you came to coach with me and I teach you how to be a manager the way I believe a manager should run a department. I could literally give you the skills and competencies through coaching and training that the people that are probably 10 years into your job don't know. So you could go in there and start to know the stuff that the people that are there don't know because they didn't, one, go to school for it, or two, they're not curious. Some people stop being curious about how to do things better. So it really just depends on you, on the individual. Are you ready? Do you feel that you can handle it and step into that space? Can you sit at the table without getting thrown off your game? Once you can demonstrate that you can sit at the table with those people, then sit at the table with those people, right? It's not about how many years of experience you have, because at some point it's like, how many possible years do you need? 10 years? How many more years past 10 do you need to figure out how to do something? You know what I mean?
So it's like the strength of character almost that you're talking about.
Yeah, it is. And everybody's going to be ready at different times. I mean, I had a girl, I'm going to give you a great story. I had a young girl who started working with me at 19 years old. She was my intern. And within 5 years, she was like becoming a manager. Within 7 years, she was an associate director. By the time she was 30, she was a director. 30 years old as a director, 32. And I told her, I said, listen, stay with me and I will show you the way and you will exceed me by 10 years. You will get to where I got to, but you'll get there 10 years earlier. I believe she got there 10 years earlier, maybe a little bit earlier than that, because she had a mentor, she had a coach, she had somebody to watch them do something. If I showed you how to do something seven times, you would learn it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You would learn it. And so you learn these different techniques and then you marry it with the confidence and that self-authored leadership. That's the part, right? That's the part that people wait forever to get, but you don't have to wait forever to get it. It's about how curious are you about yourself and when are you ready to level up? When are you ready to really face yourself? A lot of times this happens when people go through trauma. You know, they go through a trauma and they're like, okay, the way I was doing my life before, or they go through a bad situation at work, I can't keep doing it this way anymore. So when you can't keep doing it that way, you hit your head against the wall so many times, you have to start doing it differently. And so that's why people hire coaches. That's why we get you there faster, because we know the tools, the knowledge and behaviors you need to get into those places where you can sit at the table and have the confidence you need to blow it out of the water, right? Whatever you want to call it. What do we say? Destroy the stage, crush the stage, whatever
crush
you want to call
stage.
It. Crush the stage. And live and have the career that you always dreamed of having. One thing that I do want to say here is that you want to be passionate about what you do. You don't want to just have a job because you're making money. That's not authentic. That's not real either. You know, sometimes people get into these higher level roles because it's what I call the golden handcuffs. And then you get stuck and you're like, well, I like this part of my job, but like, and then you turn like, you're in your mid 50s, 60s, and you're like, oh my gosh, what did I do with my life? And you're having,
how did I even get here?
I feel like if you can get up every morning and enjoy what you do, life is so much easier.
Oh, absolutely. Around. Absolutely. Absolutely. Interesting. I love that. So, okay. So we've talked about first line managers and what skill sets they need. We've talked about, you know, moving up in your career. We've talked about what it looks like for STEM and technical roles. As managers in any industry start moving up, there's these mindset shifts that kind of have, you see little patterns here and there in our conversation, right? If you were to summarize it in two or three of the biggest mindset shifts that are needed as you go from individual contributor up into manager, middle manager, and even executive, what are those mindset shifts that need to take place in order to be a competitive candidate?
I think the biggest mindset shift initially is that you are no longer an individual contributor and you're a team leader. And so there is a big shift there. You need to start doing the activities of a team leader and letting go of the activities of an individual contributor. And start thinking like the leader. That is the first shift that needs to happen. The next shift is for them to kind of really get that this is no longer about them and their mark in the world. And it's really hard because you know, as a new manager, you don't want your people to outshine you, but eventually that needs to happen too. So eventually you need to work yourself out of a job if you really want to get up in the ranks. So it's about you constantly recreating yourself so that you can then not be needed and you can move up to the next place. So it's like, how can I do this job, find the person on the team that's going to be my replacement and mentor them so that you can get up to the next level? And that's kind of like what should be happening, right? It should be happening like that. You should be thinking that way. Who's replacing me? What happens if I get hit by a car tomorrow? Who's taking my job, right? And the organization needs to be thinking about that as well, especially in these really important roles. And that's why they do the talent management reviews and things like that. But it's just the shift is those incremental shifts. And then, you know, how can I look out for the well-being of my people? How can I look out for the capability building of my people? How can I look out for opportunities for my people? It starts to be for my people, for my people, for my people. Not like, how am I going to get to the next, to the next, to the next? It just becomes that. And then organically, it becomes you getting to the next level.
Yeah.
As well.
And it's like a servant leader, right? That is sort of like a side effect of doing a good job, which that the core of it is helping other people kind of come into their own, find their skill set, develop their skill set and move up. The side effect is you actually kind of going into a new position.
Yeah. Right. Okay. It's the servant leader. It's like Jesus washing the feet.
It really is, right? There's actually a Bible verse that I'm reminded of now where it's like, you can't take the place of honor because you'll be bumped down, right? But if you take the lowest place, then the host will come and like move you. It's kind of like, in a sense, in that way, because you mentioned you got to put your ego down. You got to always like set yourself aside and bring other people up instead. And then you will organically, right, move up like that.
You will do much better if you do it that way. Mm-hmm. You will be a successful leader. You will be the one that people don't want to leave. They won't want to leave you. They won't want to leave. Because you'll be the best manager they ever had. Nobody wants to leave good managers, really. They want to leave bad managers. They want to run from bad managers. And that destroys the organization. It's the first line leadership that really become the problem of the organization. Because once they get higher up, these people higher up have done the work on themselves. They're no longer threatened. It's at the lower levels that people get threatened because they just got out of it. They're still transitioning into the leadership mindset. And we are not training these managers to think like leaders. We're trying to train them to be managers. We should be training them to be leaders, not managers.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, we've covered so much ground. I could go on forever, but I want to be cognizant of your time. So we're going to slowly start to wrap up, but I thought it would be cool to have a couple of quick fire questions just for people to get to know you on a little bit more personal side. And so I'm going to ask you some questions. These are very difficult questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. You find a bug at your house. Are you the person who kills it or do you set it free?
I kill it.
Oh, you're so mean. Are you street smart or book smart?
Am I street smart or book smart?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like half-half. I can't say I'm either.
Okay. That was a safe one. Fresh food or fried food?
Oh, man. I love me some fried food. So
all right. Team fried food. Cautious or bold?
More bold, probably.
Okay. I sense that too. More bold. Night owl or early riser?
Early riser.
Wonderful. Okay. Now let's just imagine we've got a sea of people here, and they're all going to listen to what you have to say for the next 60 seconds. What do you think they need to hear?
Do the work on yourself. The beginning of greatness is you finding out more about you and your purpose and how you operate and what triggers you by you being a Jedi ninja on yourself. Makes you that much better of a leader.
I love that. Work on yourself. Okay, well, what if we wanted to work on ourselves and we wanted to work with you? Tell us where to find you. Tell us about your podcast. How can we get in contact with you? How can we work with you?
Okay, sure. So my website is stayoncourse.io. All of my information is there. You can learn about my book, my program that I'm launching. So I'm launching a group coaching program for new managers and managers that perhaps haven't gotten trained as well. And that can be found on my website. My podcast can be found at stayoncourse.studio. And my website is stayoncourse.io. And so you can go to my website and find out all about my programs, my coaching, my manager training program, and also, there's some interesting speaker reels that I have on there as well, because I do professional speaking as well.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing all of those. I'll make sure I include some links in the description. And again, it was amazing having you here and just grabbing all your insight as far as management and moving up in an organization. Thank you again for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
All right. Well, we'll see y'all on the next one. Hey, thanks for listening. I really appreciate you spending time with me today. If you found this episode helpful, please tap the 5-star review on the show's homepage in your podcast app. It would absolutely make my day, and it helps others discover the Uncommon Career Podcast. Now, to download your free career resources and learn how I help seasoned professionals land amazing offers in as little as 90 days, click on the link in the description or go to theuncommoncareer.com. Thanks again, and I'll see you on the next one.